White Network presents the International Jew Study Hour. Reading and commentary on Henry Ford's great classic about Jewish power in America.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and students of the International Jew. This is your study hour team, Hadding Scott.
Hello.
And yours truly, Carolyn Yeager. This is the September 20th, 2012 edition, and we are beginning a new chapter tonight, which we usually do, but this is chapter 11, which is the beginning of the second half of book one. You know, it's divided into book one and book two, but each book is divided into 10 chapters, so we finished book one, part one, and now we're in book one, part two. So we are really moving along here. Chapter 11, and the title is Jewish, with Jewish in quotes, Jewish Estimate of Gentile Human Nature.
Yeah.
And it's all about, it's all taken from the protocols. It's kind of the first chapter on analyzing what's in these protocols from various points of view. And I was going to say what tonight was. What would you say, Hadding? This chapter is, I never came up with the word or the phrase that would describe what they're going after. Well, the title kind of tells it. They're trying to show us what the Jews think of Gentiles and why we're so easy.
Well, it talks about how to manipulate the non-Jewish multitude, basically.
Yeah, right. They think they can do it. They've got it all figured out, and they explained how it is. And as I was telling Hadding right before we started, reading this chapter and reading these excerpts from the protocols was, for the first time, I got a clearer idea, that this could have been written by what I'm calling monarchists, which this Jolie fellow was supposed to be. Maurice Joly supposedly was, who they say that much of the protocols was plagiarized from his writing, in which he was trying to present. I should have put all this down here.
Explaining the manipulations of Napoleon III, who appears to have been an instrument of the Jews, if not a Jew himself.
Okay, and he was a monarchist, and he hated liberalism and democracy. Joly was, he wrote. Now, what was the name of what he wrote? It was
Dialogue in Hell between Machiavelli and Montesquieu, I believe.
Yes, and Machiavelli represented the practical Jewish ideas, and Montesquieu represented the more noble. Conservative traditional views that he liked. So, you know, I can see where these ideas are similar, because the Jews can, to many of us, represent liberalism. They have been behind liberalism. I don't think, you see, my point is that it doesn't take away from the importance of the protocols and all that they can teach us. Even if it didn't come from these meetings in 1896 that it said and so on, that really doesn't take away from it, and it's possible that it didn't.
The only problem is when people try to use the protocols as a proof of something, because it's not a proof of anything. At most, it's something that might help you to understand some things. But it's just like historical fiction.
Okay, yeah, I understand. It's not, you can't prove by the protocols that the Jews have a plan to take over the world. I would say I never would have thought that anyway, if it was brought up to me that way. But you know, so that some people, I guess.
There are also some respects in which I think the protocols mislead people. I mean, in the sense of putting people on the wrong track.
Well, there's a lot of things that do that. And that doesn't mean they're not valuable. I mean, this is a problem with people. And this is a problem with how things are used, you know, to make people see it wrongly and so on. So, well, anyway, we've got plenty of information that's going to be coming up that we can go into all that. So let's get started, Hattie. Now, this is a fairly long chapter, but not real long.
Okay. Got these quotes at the beginning, alleged quotes, from Protocol 16. Upon completing this program of our present and future actions, I will read to you the principles of these theories.
Now, Hattie, I wish you wouldn't use that voice when you're reading these things. Well, because they didn't really talk that way. But you can use some kind of a voice, but they didn't, you know. These, like I mentioned to somebody, I was thinking about Bibi Netanyahu. There's no more dangerous plotting Jew than him. And he doesn't talk like that. He has this low, deep voice, talk just like you and I. And so people don't, you know, if they all talked like that, it would be kind of easy to.
Oh, yeah, that would make
say,
simplify
hey,
everything.
Yeah, what?
Okay. In all that I have discussed with you hitherto, I have endeavored to indicate carefully the secrets of past and future events and of those momentous occurrences of the near future, toward which we are rushing in a stream of great crises, anticipating the hidden principles of future relationships with the Gentiles and of our financial operations.
Yeah, so, now you sound like Henry Kissinger. That's good.
Okay, yeah.
He's one of those.
That was from Protocol 22.
Yeah.
All right. The protocols, which profess themselves to be an outline of the Jewish world program, are found upon analysis to contain four main divisions. These, however, are not marked in the structure of the documents, but in the thought. There is a fifth, if the object of it all is included, but this object is assumed throughout the protocols, being only here and there defined in terms. And the four main divisions are great trunks from which there are numerous branches. There is first what is alleged to be the Jewish conception of human nature, by which is meant Gentile nature. It is inconceivable that such a plan as that by which the protocols set forth, or that which the protocols set forth, could have been evolved by a mind that had not previously based the probability of success on a certain estimate of the ignobility and corruptibility of human nature, which all through the protocols is referred to as Gentile nature.
Yeah, okay. So this is really important, setting the tone here that, you know, even though they say Gentiles aren't really human, we're the ones who have human nature, not them, and they would never be so stupid and easily corrupted and gullible as we are. And they say that somewhere further on down, that they have that they don't fall for this kind of thing that we do. So anyway,
there's, I think it's in Deuteronomy. It also says that the children of Israel will succeed through the immorality of their enemies, something like that.
Okay, yeah, all right, there you go.
Then, secondly, there is the account of what has already been accomplished in the realization of the program, things actually done. Thirdly.
Yeah, they mean already done, you know.
That
which is already done.
Yeah. Thirdly, there is a complete instruction in the methods to be used to get the program still further fulfilled. Methods which would themselves supply the estimate of human nature upon which the whole fabric is based, if there were nothing else to indicate it. Fourth, the protocols contain in detail some of the achievements which, at the time these words were uttered, were yet to be made. Some of these desired things have been achieved in the meantime, for it should be borne in mind that between the year 1905 and the year 1920, there has been time to set many influences in motion and attain many ends. As the second quotation at the head of this article would indicate, the speaker knew that events were rushing in a stream of great crises. a knowledge which is amply attested by Jewish sources outside the protocols.
You think they're referring to World War One, sort of, and everything about that? Because this would have been just previous to that.
Well, there was First World War, and there was the 1905 war with Japan, which was complicated by socialist agitations in its wake, and revolution, actually. And there were a lot of problems in the late 19th century as a result of industrialization.
Yes.
And also there was the fact, this is something Loris Dennis points out, that there were some difficulties occurring because of the exhaustion of the possibilities for colonization and exploitation of colonies.
That culminated in the Great Depression. A lot going on and a lot of things shifting and changing.
And also the fact that Europe had expanded out into the world and had tended to make a lot of systems of thought subject to criticism. It brought in a lot of tendency toward cultural relativism, being exposed to so many other peoples all around the world, and brought a certain amount of instability. I think a lot of things like the development of Darwinism really have more to do with that than with any conspiracy. They mention Darwin later here.
Yeah, they do. Right.
All right. If this series of articles represented a special pleading upon the Jewish question, the present article would seek to win the reader's confidence by presenting first the set of facts which are described under secondly in the above list of main divisions. To begin with, the estimate of human nature here disclosed is to court alienation of the reader's interest, especially if the reader be a Gentile. We know from abundant sources what the Jewish estimate of human nature is, and it tallies in all respects with what is disclosed in the protocols. But it has always been one of the fallacies of Gentile thought that human nature is now full of dignity and nobility.
You know, that's really good. You know, this is what we're always told that we fall for. We fall for all these liberal ideas because we believe that man is at base, everybody's good. You know, we want to have these noble ideas, and it's just not true. So you can't govern that way.
That's Enlightenment thinking, this idea that the man is good by nature, and if you just
treat him right,
government off of his back, he'll do good in the world. And the lion will lie down with the lamb. There's some ridiculous painting from the Enlightenment that shows all the different animals lying around peacefully together. It's very gay looking.
It is, because, you know, it's nothing like that, and they couldn't survive that way. Somebody's got to be feeding them then if they're all just going to sit around peacefully. What are they going to eat? They're not vegetarians.
This Enlightenment view of harmony is achievable in the world. We're still suffering from that. There is little question when the subject is considered in all its lights that the Jewish conception is right. It's not really a Jewish conception, but. And so far as these protocols are concerned, their low estimate of mankind, though harsh to human pride and conceit, are very largely true. Just to run through the protocols and select the salient passages in which this view is expressed is to find a pretty complete philosophy of the motives and qualities of human beings. Take these words from the first protocol. It should be noted that people with evil instincts are more numerous than those with good ones. Therefore, the best results in governing them are attained by intimidation and violence, and not by academic argument. Every man aims for power. Everyone desires to be a dictator, if possible. Moreover, few would not sacrifice the good of others to attain their own ends. People in masses and people of the masses are guided by exceptionally shallow passions. Beliefs, customs, traditions, and sentimental theories, and are inclined toward party divisions a fact which prevents any form of agreement, even when this is founded on a thoroughly logical basis. Every decision of the mob depends upon an accidental or prearranged majority, which, owing to its ignorance of the mysteries of political secrets, gives expression to absurd decisions that introduce anarchy into government. In working out an expedient plan of action, it is necessary to take into consideration the meanness, the vacillation, the changeability of the crowd. It is necessary to realize that the force of the masses is blind, unreasoning, and unintelligent, prone to listen now to the right and now to the left.
Our triumph has been... This is long. I said, okay, we've got one more paragraph. All right.
Our triumph has also been made easier because, in our relations with the people necessary to us, we have always played upon the most sensitive strings of the human mind, on calculation, greed, and the insatiable material desires of men. Each of these human weaknesses, taken separately, is capable of paralyzing initiative and placing the will of the people at the disposal of the purchaser of their activities.
Well, what do you think of that? I thought way up in the first paragraph of this quote, saying that that we have terrible instincts and that few would not sacrifice the good of others to attain their own ends. If you think about that, everybody wants to attain their own ends. And to sacrifice the good of others, it doesn't mean that, what does that actually mean? You know, it's as though it's telling you that what people should be doing is looking after the other all the time and not after themselves. And see, that's the thing that doesn't work out. You don't have to be crushing and cheating others in order just because you're not looking after their good. It's up to everybody to look after their own good.
Well, people have a sense of social responsibility.
And if you have a social framework to work in, that's another thing I was going to say. You know, if you have a community of people like yourself and, you know, people that you have this feeling for, then you're all just, you know, working, you're all helping one another. I'm all for that. But even in those communities, people mostly, you know, like each family looks after itself and people look after themselves. You know, this can make people feel like they should never be looking. These kinds of statements, you know, can make people think that they're wrong if they look after themselves before they look after someone else. And, you know, I think that that's different. Individuals living in a community are different than the leadership that is in charge of seeing that everybody is treated fairly and, you know what I mean? So.
Well, there's always a tension between self-interest and collective interest, or there frequently is. And we praise very highly the people who make extreme self-sacrifice for the good of the community or the good of the group.
Yes, we do.
This is something that's rooted in it's explained by sociobiology, why individuals will sacrifice themselves for the group. It's because the group represents their gene pool, and in a way they survive poor by preserving the group. What?
Yeah. If they understand that, if that's all
but, percent, you know, these tendencies are, this social tendency is stronger in some people than others. And that's what it says here. It said people with evil instincts are more numerous than those with good instincts. So you have to, the problem is the better people need to be in charge.
Well,
and,
that's
and
right.
You need to direct the other people.
Yeah.
And you don't, that's exactly what's undermined with democracy.
Right. Okay. In the fifth protocol.
Yeah. I had some nits to pick here with some other aspects of this.
Okay.
For one thing, this is the general gist of what's being said here is not original with the protocols. If it's in Joly, it's not original with him either. This goes back to Plato, at least. Plato said the multitude is incapable of philosophy, and that the good man, which is the same as the wise man in his view, is very much in the minority. This is an old aristocratic view, really. And also you had Gustave Le Bon, who wrote The Psychology of Crowds sometime in the late 19th century. And Gustave Le Bon considered that crowds behave very irrationally.
Mm-hmm. Well, we have lots of interesting examples of that, the madness of crowds.
Right, right. There was a lot of stuff about this written before the protocols.
Well, I don't think that you would have to think that all these ideas that are in here originated with the writers, even if you believed it was authentic or was written by...
Well, the point is that the whoever wrote this doesn't seem to know that.
Well, I don't know about that.
They say, oh, look, this is the Jewish way of looking at the crowd. Well, no, it's not really the Jewish way. It's a very old traditional way.
But it's a
pre-Enlightenment way, which you might not hear very often in the United States. Also, where it says we have always played upon the most sensitive strings of the human mind on calculation, greed, and the insatiable material desires of men. That's a reference to the bourgeoisie, what they call the bourgeoisie, which are the people that made a lot of money in the period of colonization and wanted to advance socially. Those are the kinds of people that joined Freemasonry. Mm-hmm. And initially were important in overthrowing the French monarchy.
Well, there's no question that those are human weaknesses, of men, and there they are. You know, I mean,
it's the overdevelopment of self-interest at the expense of social responsibility. All right. Let's see, where did we leave off?
Fifth protocol. In the fifth protocol,
this shrewd observation on human nature is to be found. In all times, nations as well as individuals accepted words for acts. They have been satisfied by what is shown them, rarely noticing whether the promise has been followed by fulfillment. For this reason, we will organize show institutions which will conspicuously display their devotion to progress. And this from the 11th protocol. The Gentiles are like a flock of sheep. They will close their eyes to everything because we will promise them to return all the liberties taken away after the enemies of peace have been subjugated and all the parties pacified. Is it worthwhile to speak of how long they will have to wait? For what have we conceived all this program and instilled its measures into the minds of the Gentiles without giving them the possibility of examining its underside, if it is not for the purpose of attaining by circuitous methods that which is unattainable by our scattered race by a direct to our scattered race by a direct route?
Well, you know, the promise that once the crisis of the enemy, you know, now we have the enemies of whatever kind of terrorists are around or whatever, is over, then these liberties that had to be given up in order to give us security will be given back. You know, they're doing that today, big time.
Well, see, I have a problem with that because, you know, the institution of the dictatorship was invented by the Romans, because it was useful. You have an emergency, so you empower one of your people to take care of the emergency, and it's expected that he will only be in office temporarily. And there are modern examples of emergencies where somebody had to assume extraordinary powers to deal with the emergency. It's not always a bad thing. Maurice Joly is probably the author of that particular section there, and he's talking about Napoleon III, whom he did not support. So it's really a complaint about Joly. That government power can be for good or for bad. It depends on who's using it, really, and for what purpose.
Well, that's true of everything. Okay.
Notice also this very shrewd observation upon the joiners of secret societies. This estimate being made by the protocols to indicate how easily these societies may be used to further the plan. Usually it is the climbers, careerists, and people, generally speaking, who are not serious, who most readily join secret societies. And we shall find them easy to handle, and through them operate the mechanism of our projected machine. The remarks under this head are curtailed by the present writer, because the protocols make reference to a very important secret order, the mention of whose name in this connection might lead to misunderstanding, and which is therefore reserved for future and fuller attention. It's probably talking about Freemasonry, of which Ford was a member. Mm-hmm. It will, however, be of interest to the members of that order to see what the protocols have to say of it, and then to check up the facts and see how far they correspond with the words.
So they're going to do that later, huh?
Yeah, I guess.
Something. Okay.
To continue. The Gentiles join lodges out of curiosity, or in the hope that through them they may worm their way into social distinction. We, therefore, give them this success so that we can take advantage of the self-conceit to which it gives birth, and because of which people unconsciously accept our suggestions without examination. You cannot imagine to what an extent the most intelligent Gentiles may be brought to a state of unconscious naivete under conditions of self-deceit, and how easy it is to discourage them by the least failure, even the stopping of applause, or to bring them into a state of servile subjection for the sake of regaining it. The Gentiles are as ready to sacrifice their plans for the sake of popular success as our people are to ignore success for the sake of carrying out our plans. This psychology of theirs facilitates the task of directing them.
Now, this is what I was referring to earlier, that they're claiming or saying that we are so caught up in our self-esteem. That's what I'm calling it here. You know, false self-esteem. Excuse me. That we will sacrifice higher plans for the sake of this popular success. But they do not. Their people do not. Well, I don't know. Maybe if they're talking about their top people who are the planners of all this. That's what they mean. But if it's not them anyway, so what difference does it make? But, you know, they're just portraying themselves here as so superior to the Gentile. So naturally they should have.
Well, what it's describing there is followers of the crowd. And mm-hmm. That's probably most of any population.
Yes, exactly right. Exactly. And that's why I say, you know, the Jews are following along, whatever they're told. But they have a different crowd. Yeah, they're saying that they ignore success for the sake of carrying out our plans. I don't know any Jews that ignore success. So that's a false claim or boast or whatever.
All right.
There are
a few of the passages in which this estimate of human or Gentile nature is made out in words. But even if it were not so baldly stated, it could be easily inferred from various items in the program which was depended upon to break up Gentile solidarity and strength. The method is one of disintegration. Break up the people into parties and sects. Sow abroad the most promising and utopian of ideas, and you will do two things. You will always find a group to cling to each idea you throw out, and you will find this partisanship dividing and estranging the various groups. The authors of the protocols show in detail how this is to be done. Not one idea, but a mass of ideas are to be thrown out, and there is to be no unity among them. The purpose is not to get the people thinking one thing, but to think so diversely about so many different things that there will be no unity among them. The result of this will be vast disunity, vast unrest, and that is the result aimed for. When once the solidarity of Gentile society is broken up, and the name Gentile society is perfectly correct, for human society is overwhelmingly Gentile, then this solid wedge of another idea, which is not at all affected by the prevailing confusion, can make its way unsuspectedly to the place of control. It is well known that a body of 20 trained police or soldiers can accomplish more than a disordered mob of 1,000 persons. So the minority initiated into the plan can do more with a nation or a world broken into 1,000 antagonistic parties than any of the parties could do. Divide and rule is the motto of the protocols. Of course, that comes from ancient Rome.
Well, exactly. That's goes way back. And then the idea about to get the not for the people not to think one thing. You know, we're told so often that, oh, people, if you want everybody to think the same way, that's so boring. We want to have allow people to have everybody have their own opinion, their own thoughts, individualism, so on. And yet, if you want a peaceful, prosperous nation, there's nothing better than if everybody thinks the same way. You know, so it might, you know, I think we're just, that's just part of the propaganda that we have really swallowed because it sounds right. You know, it doesn't sound good to think of the population all agreeing, basically, and thinking the same way. Mm-hmm. It sounds like sheep, you know. I mean, I always thought that. But I do know that unless the people think the same way, you're not going to have a prosperous society. I mean, you're not going to have a peaceful society. You're not going to have one that can work on projects that are important rather than just arguing about it.
Yeah.
So, that's just a lot. That's something that goes against the grain, but it's food for thought, I think. Mm-hmm.
The division of society is perfectly easy according to the estimate of human nature made in these documents. It is human nature to take promises for acts. No one who considered the list of dreams and vagaries and theories that have swayed the people through the centuries can doubt this. The more utopian, the more butterfly-like the theory, the more it commands public adherence. Just as the protocols say, Gentile society does not scrutinize the origin or the consequences of the theories it adopts. When a theory makes its appeal to the mind, the tendency is to believe that the mind which receives it always had it in essence, and therefore the experience has all the glow of original discovery. In this manner, theory after theory has been exploited among the masses. Theory after theory has been found to be impracticable and has been discarded. But the result is precisely that which the program of the protocols aims for. With the discarding of each theory, society is a little more broken than it was before. It is a little more helpless before its exploiters. It is a little more confused as to where to look for leadership. As a consequence, society falls an easy victim again to a theory which promises it the good it seeks, and the failure of this theory leaves it still more broken. There is no longer any such thing as public opinion. Distrust and division are everywhere. And in the midst of the confusion everyone is dimly aware that there is a higher group that is not divided at all, but is getting exactly what it wants by means of the confusion that it obtains all around. It will be shown, as claimed by the protocols, that most of the disruptive theories abroad in the world today are of Jewish origin.
So do you agree with that?
They make that last
statement.
I'm skeptical. Because, as I pointed out already, this view of the behavior of the multitude is not of Jewish origin, but he's treating it as if it were.
But that view is not what's disruptive. That's just a fact. But disruptive theories has to be stuff that's introduced into the mass thinking. And now we could say via media, nowadays. In order to upset people's thinking, or to get people having lots of different ideas that don't go together, and so on, and
disagreeing over it.
This is supposed to be so good in democracy. Oh, we can work all this stuff out.
This is largely what happens when you move out of a period where everything is controlled by church dogma, and you start. Letting people reason and think. That leads to some instability and disagreement in the positions that people take.
True.
Just naturally it happens that way. I think there are very few ideas that were invented by Jews. They tend to pick up on something that some Gentile created, some idea that some Gentile created, and run with it and maybe push it too far.
Very possible. That's a good statement. Because they didn't dream up everything. One thing they did do is come up with a lot of economic ideas. What they've done the most. They've dreamed up these ways that they can make money economically, particularly with interest and banking and so on. A lot of that comes from them. But that's very bad.
Some of it might. I think this is also exaggerated.
Yeah.
Because, for example, Marx, the main observation in Marx about the self-contradictory nature of capitalism, that was not original with Marx. That comes from a Swiss writer named who called himself Sismondi. There were a number of non-Jewish economists that were important.
All right. I guess I was thinking of these banking mechanisms.
We just hear a lot more about these Jewish ideologues, and they push their particular version of these things very hard.
Okay.
All right. It will also be shown that the one solid, unbroken group in the world today, the group that knows where it wants to go and is going there regardless of the condition of society, is the Jewish group. Now, that's really the key fact right there, the fact that they're an interest group that is organized.
Yeah, I was going to say, do you agree with that one? I agree with that one.
I agree.
Okay. All right.
The most dangerous theory of all is that which explains the rise of theories and the social breakup which follows them. These are all symptoms of progress, we are told. If so, then progress is toward dissolution. No one can predicate the fact of progress on the ground that, whereas our fathers made wheels to go round with the blowing wind or the running water, we make them go round by successive small explosions of gasoline. The question of progress is, where are the wheels taking us? Was windmill and water wheel society better or worse than the present society? Was it more unified in its morality? Did it more highly respect law? Did it produce a higher and sturdier type of character? The modern theory of ferment, that out of all the unrest and change and transvaluation of values, a new and better mankind is to be evolved, is not borne out by any fact on the horizon. It is palpably a theory whose purpose is to make a seeming good out of that which is undeniable evil. The theories which cause the disruption and the theory which explains the disruption as good come from the same source. The whole science of economics, conservative and radical, capitalistic and anarchistic, is of Jewish origin.
Well, there it is.
Said, I don't really agree with that. This is another of the announcements of the protocols which the facts confirm.
But they're saying, though, also, I think that a lot of this stuff is put out as theories, but it's not scientific. How many theories are there that a lot of people we believe in, we're told, you know, even though it's a theory, we're kind of taught that it's actually a proven fact, and it isn't. A lot of them aren't. So, you know, it's a very unscientific basis that our world has been built on, our modern world.
Well, there's a lot of room for that in social sciences. Now, all this is accomplished not by acts, but by words. The word brokers of the world, those who wish words to do duty for things, in their dealings with the world outside their class, are undoubtedly the Jewish group, the international Jews with which these articles deal, and their philosophy and practices are precisely set forth in the protocols. Take for illustration these passages. The first is from the first protocol. Political freedom is an idea, not a fact. It is necessary to know how to apply this idea when there is need of a clever bait to gain the support of the people for one's party, if such a party has undertaken to defeat another party already in power. This task is made easier if the opponent has himself been infected by principles of freedom or so-called liberalism, and for the sake of the idea will yield some of his own power. It reminds me of libertarians who say that if they had a chance to establish an all-white society, they wouldn't do it because of their libertarianism.
So, yeah. So, you know, but they're saying that ideas are not facts, and that political freedom is an idea. Freedom is an idea, but it's not a fact. And these protocol writers don't intend to give any kind of freedom to anybody.
Well, see, freedom is a concept that most people haven't really thought out.
Exactly.
Freedom basically means that you're not inhibited from doing whatever it is that you want to do. That's freedom. That's, in practical terms, that's what freedom means.
Right. That was what I wanted.
whether somebody else is not able to do what he wants to do really has very little bearing on my freedom.
Well, you can't, if you're worried, if you're concerned with your own, you just can't be thinking about somebody else's. They have to take care of their own. What I was saying earlier, yeah, it's a very, well, I don't know. I think it's based in human nature. I mean, I think we naturally, and it's healthy, that we're looking out after ourselves. Now, I don't mean in this way where you just, you know, rip off other people and stuff. Not at all. But still, everybody has the responsibility to look after their own interests and happiness. And if everybody's looking after their own and they're not interfering with other people, trying to run what they're doing. Now, that sounds libertarian, but I don't really mean to go all the way into political libertarianism with that at all. So I don't know. Anyway.
Well, I would say that the freest society is a homogeneous society.
That's right. I would agree with that. That's what
Or consider this from the fifth protocol. To obtain control over public opinion, it is first necessary to confuse it by the expression from various sides of so many conflicting opinions that the Gentiles will lose themselves in the labyrinth and come to understand that it is best to have no opinion on political questions, which it is not given to society at large to understand, but only to the ruler who directs society. This is the first secret. The second secret consists in so increasing and intensifying the shortcomings of the people in their habits, passions, and mode of living that no one will be able to collect himself in the chaos. And consequently, people will lose all their natural understanding. This measure will serve us also in breeding disagreement in all parties, in disintegrating all those collective forces which are still unwilling to submit to us, and in discouraging all personal initiative which can in any way interfere with our undertaking.
Well, there's a lot of bragging going on.
Yeah, and I would point out that this confusion of many opinions, it's not really the way politics in the USA works. What people are in the United States are encouraged to have a political opinion, but it has to be selected from a very narrow range of Jew-friendly opinions.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, it's not as many as they make out here. They don't put out the hundreds of thousands of things.
It doesn't seem to me that this is the strategy that's used in the United States at all.
Okay. You know,
this encouragement of having many political opinions.
All right.
And as far as chaos, so nobody can collect himself in the chaos. This is accomplished in the United States through immigration and miscegenation.
Yes, and then the messages from the media.
Yeah, and also what they used to call the generation gap.
All that stuff. See, I bet we could sit here and think of some more even.
And this from the 13th protocol. And you may also notice that we seek approval, not for our acts, but for our words uttered in regard to one or another question. We always announce publicly that we are guided in all our measures by the hope and the conviction that we are serving the general good. To divert over-restless people from discussing political questions, we shall now bring forward new problems apparently connected with the people, problems of industry. In these, let them lose themselves as much as they like. Under such questions, we shall make them think that the new questions have also a political bearing.
This must be one of the longer. They said, was it last week that there were some long chapters and some short ones?
This is 12 pages.
Yeah, well, this one, they're going on and on. When they get into some areas that seem like it's not as penetrating as some other parts of it is, like this one.
Well, it seems to be referring to Marxism there. But if you take into account what was mentioned early in the International Jew about the struggle for power between industrialists and bankers, this is actually not irrelevant to politics. This agitation of the workers against industry is in favor of the side of the financiers, the Jewish financiers, yeah, as we're told.
Okay.
All right. It is to be hoped that the reader, as his eye passes over these details of the program, is also permitting his mind to pass over the trend of events, to see if he may detect for himself these very developments in the life and thought of the past few years. To prevent them from really thinking out anything themselves, we shall deflect their attention to amusements, games, pastimes, excitements, and people's palaces. Such interests will distract their minds completely from questions on which we might be obliged to struggle with them. Becoming less and less accustomed to independent thinking, people will express themselves in unison with us, because we alone offer new lines of thought, of course, through persons whom they do not consider as in any way connected with us.
Well, that is what's going on. You know, this we can all relate to, the amusements, games, pastimes, excitements, and so on. When you have an empire, that becomes more prevalent, doesn't it? Is that what we would say? Because we always think about that with the Roman Empire, and we think about that with ourselves today. I don't know how they handled it in the Soviet Union, which wasn't really an empire. Would you call that an empire? They didn't have that. They didn't do it that way. They did it just by force of harsh rule.
But, well, I don't think. in the first place, I think any autocrat would probably prefer that ordinary people think about something other than politics and leave the politics to the experts, you know? But this is really not the way politics in the United States are controlled. Instead, as I mentioned earlier, what they do is they encourage people to have a political opinion. It's just a misinformed political opinion. You know, they get very entrenched in supporting the war on terror or something like that.
Yeah, they do that. But all right, well, let's go on.
Same protocol, it is plainly stated, what is the purpose of the output of liberal theories, of which Jewish writers, poets, rabbis, societies, and influences are the most prolific sources. The role of the liberal utopians will be completely played out when our government is recognized. Until that time, they will perform good services. For that reason, we will continue to direct thought into all the intricacies of fantastic theories, new and supposedly progressive. Surely we have been completely successful in turning the witless heads of the Gentiles by the word progress.
Well, that's true.
Yeah.
You know, after World War II, they started talking about progress, you know, to people, just, you know, to the public. And, well, I know that I was convinced that in 10, 20 years, there was going to be amazing stuff going on. They're always pushing progress, and nothing much changed. Whatever we got wasn't that good. You got television, and then you got brainwashing.
Technology.
Yeah. But well, even that didn't do the things they said. We're all gonna live without any working, and housewives were gonna have some robot running around their house doing everything while they sat around, and all this baloney, you know, that they made it look nice and believable, but you know, it was all based on the idea of progress. And wasn't it GE that got that motto? Progress is our most important product.
Huh.
I mean, GE was one of the early TV sponsors. Advertisers, and they were all over the place and always saying that progress is our most important product.
Yeah, well, progress was a cherished notion in the 19th century also.
Yes, it was. Yes. Here the whole.
We've had a lot of technological progress in the 20th century, but meanwhile, human quality is very definitely in the decline.
Yeah, that's true.
I remember when George W. Bush talked about a mission to Mars, which would require putting a base on the moon first, that someday some explorers from outside of our solar system would find this abandoned moon base and wonder what extinct civilization built that thing.
Oh, yeah. Well, there used to be a lot of that.
Because, you know...
A lot of talk about space exploration, which never really panned out that way.
With the human foundation for all this technology in the decline, it's obviously not going to continue.
No, that's right. Exactly.
Here is the whole program of confusing, enervating, and trivializing the mind of the world. And it would be a most outlandish thought to put into words, were it not possible to show that this is just what has been done and is still being done by agencies which are highly lauded and easy to be identified among us. Of course, there he's saying again that you really don't need the protocols in order to know what the protocols say. A recent writer in a prominent magazine has pointed out what he calls the impossibility of the Jewish ruling group being allied in one common world program because, as he showed, there were Jews acting as the leading minds in all the divisions of present-day opinion. There were Jews at the head of the capitalists, Jews at the head of the labor unions, and Jews at the head of those more radical organizations which find even the labor unions too tame. There is a Jew at the head of the judiciary of England, that would have been Lord Reading at the time, I believe, and a Jew at the head of Sovietism in Russia. How can you say, he asked, that they are united when they represent so many points of view?
Yeah, that's a clever thing that we've all become aware of, how they say, oh, look, at Jews are doing this, they're doing that, they're doing the other thing, and so they're not united at all.
No. The common unity, the possible common purpose of it all, is thus expressed in the ninth protocol. People of all opinions and of all doctrines are at our service. Restorers of monarchy, demagogues, socialists, communists, and other utopians, we have put them all to work. Every one of them, from his point of view, is undermining the last remnant of authority, is trying to overthrow all existing order. All the governments have been tormented by these actions, but we will not give them peace until they recognize our supergovernment. The function of the idea is referred to, in the 10th protocol also. When we introduced the poison of liberalism into the government organism, its entire political complexion changed. And by liberalism here, I assume he means liberalism as conceived in the 19th century, which is what we call civil society today.
Yeah, yeah, very different, much more relating to commercialism, right?
Yeah, individual rights and individual self-interest.
And I understand in Europe they still think of it that way. It's just in America that we have this totally different. What we see as liberalism is left-wingism or something.
Yeah, what we call conservatism in the USA, they call neoliberalism in Europe.
Right.
Okay. The whole outlook of these protocols upon the world is that the idea may be made a most potent poison. The authors of these documents do not believe in liberalism. They do not believe in democracy. But they lay plans for the constant preaching of these ideas because of their power to break up society, to divide it into groups, to destroy the power of collective opinions through a variety of convictions. The poison of an idea is their most relied upon weapon. And interesting, Adolf Hitler actually uses that metaphor of the idea as poison. He says that Marx distilled the whole poison of the essential poison of 19th century liberal thinking.
Okay, I lost my place, so keep going and I'll find
plan
it.
Plan of thus using ideas extends to education. We have misled, stupefied, and demoralized the youth of the Gentiles by means of education in principles and theories patently false to us, but which we have inspired. That's Protocol 9. It extends also to family life. Having in this way inspired everybody with the thought of his own importance, we will break down the influence of family life among the Gentiles and its educational importance. Protocol 10.
Yeah, well, we've only got less than a minute. Maybe we should stop here. This is going to go on and talk a little bit about Darwinism, Marxism, and Nietzscheism. And, there's quite a bit more to go. So we will have to continue this next week, ladies and gentlemen, Chapter 11 next week, and start Chapter 12, which is equal length, so probably won't finish Chapter 12 next week. So we might be kind of in between chapters for a while.
Yeah.
There's nothing we can really do about it. So, we've got 10 seconds. Well, okay, thanks, Hattie. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for listening tonight live, and we will be back next week for another installment of our study group.
Thanks for listening. The International Jew Study Hour will return next week, exclusively on the White Network.